aligned with what our regular land use identifications require, which is if there is a challenge to set aside or repeal the approval, including under such basis as CEQA, that the applicant would agree to indemnify and pay for defense of the county.
So.
In the county upholding.
I can understand how a citizen can be held liable for providing false testimony for which a permit is processed. But I can't come to grips with the fact that you're going to ask a citizen to defend an action of the county approving a process that they followed, including any mistakes the county may make in that process.
Supervisor, okay?
Yeah, I'm kind of along the same lines as Supervisor Howe. I'm having a hard time with requiring or asking a citizen, a constituent, to take the hit for something that the county decided on, if it comes down to it. That seems a little bit too overreaching for me. There seems to be, I think we need to rethink that somehow. If it were mutual, or somehow the constituent had some say in the decision-making process, but to just say that they are going to identify a decision that the county made is, to me, not okay. Stop there for now.
Supervisor Chris.
Yeah, I think under this process, so we would still have, we would be contracted to hire a certified or whatever you want to say, licensed hydrologist to show that would have a negative impact on either public trust or neighbors' wells.
Yeah, that's the current process right now, and we're hoping to develop an alternative to that with Dr. Polia's permit decision making tool.
I see in the staff report there, you had to pull it up here, the different counties do have indemnify, that I shy away from that, because if they go through the process, it would be the same as building a building, or if a house or whatever, you got the license, you got permit, everything passed muster. In this case, a hydrologist or Dr. Foglia's work there was used as a basis for it. Everything was done legally and ethically and above board. It'd be kind of hard to say, well, now you pull this indemnifies from everything. Is there modifications that maybe this week? The counties that do have indemnification, do they have a standard boilerplate that they use, or do they have, are they all over the place?
Some counties have a separate indemnification agreement. Sometimes it's just on the application that says that, you know, there's just a line that says the applicant, by signing this application, agrees to indemnify the county if the project is challenged.
I don't mean to hoodwink you on this, throw a question at you. You're building a shop or a building or a shopping mall, whatever. Do you have that clause for indemnification or anything like that?
For discretionary land use projects, the board passed a resolution in 2009 where they required indemnification on the basis that it was in the interest of the taxpayers of the County of Siskiyou that such legal costs associated with private projects be borne by the project proponent.
Even if they jumped all the hoops and everything?
Yes. Sometimes, you know, CEQA litigation results, and it was just a decision of the about time that.
Back in 2009. Mm-hmm. I was intrigued. Mm-hmm. I'll stop there. Thank you.
Anything further?
Yeah, I have a follow up. On the certification submitted by a hydrogeologist, does that carry the same liability with their license as, say, a civil engineer would if they're approving a project?
Yeah, response to that, counsel?
Well, what I'm looking at is, are we, with an indemnification agreement, absolving that licensee's requirement to meet certain standards of the state?
Just generally speaking, it's along the same lines as certified and stamped by that professional individual. So whatever liability coverage they carry associated with that, I don't understand.
Because I know a civil engineer, once they approve a project, and then they're liable to it.
Yeah.
And then the agreement would be directed towards the county. It would be, risk shifting as between the county.
Back to the sunset clause for the governing order. These guidelines are directly related to that. So if the sunset clause goes into effect in March, then these guidelines go away? Is that?
For the most part, I'd say yes, with the exception of the puppy trust issue.
Right.
So the governor's order specifically addressing potential effect on adjacent wells to be dissolved and go away.
Yeah.
And we would still be left with dealing with our future obligation to develop the program for the public rest.
That portion would be picked up by Dr. Foglia's work.
Yeah, and it's a working process, as council said, moving forward.
So how are these guidelines going to be? Are you going to be really specific in the guidelines what relates to the governor's order versus everything else, the public trust part?
But
so that come March, you could go, this page goes away, the rest of it is still in play. So that it's very clear to the public. You could rip that page out and go, oh, okay, How's that going to work?
Yeah, essentially, Sky Valley Basin and Shasta Valley Basin would still be your process as far as impacts on public trust property. Everything else would fade away. So conversation about siting a well adjacent to another well is not in the public trust conversation would fade away.
If the governor decides to extend it, we just leave that page in the book. If the governor decides to do it again, God forbid we have another drought, we don't want to lose that page. We can put it back in if we need to.
Have it somewhere in the digital file.
Right.
Through the changes for clarification, it's not so much extending the governor's order as when he's prepared to rescind his order. So we're waiting on an indefinite event.
Right, and that's kind of my point is, we're putting a lot of work into this and trying to differentiate the two, but we're still not really sure. We're putting a lot of work into this and making sure everybody knows what they're supposed to do, and we're at everybody else's mercy. And we're putting our constituents in the same position. So, I don't know. It's difficult to be, we're all doing it. We're in constant flux with this, and it's really frustrating to me. we never have any solid answers, and we keep trying to change, you know, to accommodate everybody and our government. And we can't come up with solid answers, and we're trying to make everybody happy. And I'm just throwing it out there to the universe. We're doing the best we can with what we have, and everybody keeps coming up with answers, and everybody keeps changing the questions. So, you know, it's a difficult situation for us to be in. Just throwing it out there. So, thank you for working so hard to try to accommodate all of these ever-changing issues that are being thrown at you, us.
Supervisor Chris.
Yeah, just to piggyback off of what Supervisor Oregon said, there's one thing with the goalposts keeping. When you read the legislative bills every year, you can see more and more things. Sometimes they pass, sometimes they don't. We still have the concerns on indemnify. You know, if someone jumped through our hoops and did everything they're supposed to do, the hydrologist, which is far enough, which we've asked in the past, is still doing the job. I think that somehow heard them on that. And then for the interesting, like I said, the vote for this presentation.
Follow-up? Nothing. So a couple things from, I guess, my perspective. I know the indemnification clause has been used on larger projects. I'll call it more corporate entities than John Q. Citizen that basically has whatever size land parcel that they own, and I guess fundamentally the right to be able to just have water. I mean, that's part of owning property, at least in my mind. But if an individual did indemnify the county as proposed, and we had agreed to that, can that individual recoup defense costs if they are sued? Versus, I know the county, we can't. So we're always on the hook one way or the other. We've got to defend, but we can't recoup. But can a private individual that would indemnify the county, can they recover defense costs?
No, a lawsuit, the challenge is the county's action would be subject to whatever, you know, attorney's fees will apply as government agents.
So even the private individual that's indemnifying the county can't recover those costs of defense? No. Okay. So how do we deal with the governor's order dewatering the system altogether? Because a lot of people that have used water historically in Siskiyou County, winter water, groundwater recharge is all part of what we're talking about here.
Stock water.
Yeah, I mean, stock water as well. But by eliminating that factor for non-use, we don't get that groundwater recharge. And yet, we'll have somebody that will, and this isn't to pit one landowner against another, that's not my point, but when you have new wells that are drilled that are deeper now because of that, and because older wells that are not as deep as some of the newer ones are affected, how do we account for that in this guideline?
I don't see any mechanism to account for that with the governor's order and our guidelines addressing the governor's order. It's just simply a conversation between this well and this well, and whether potentially it's going to affect its ability to produce.
But if we had groundwater recharge during the course of the winter, as we would normally, mm-hmm. we wouldn't even be really talking about it, would we? Potentially.
Well, we'd still have the same analysis. It would be an easier job for the hydrogeologist to make a determination of a finding of less impact.
So I don't support the indemnification. I get it, why we would even ask it, but individual landowners aren't going to be able to take that hit. I don't know how they can. So that's where I'm at on that. With regard to the guidelines, I don't know. You're trying to have guidelines to be able to affect those that have been affected or not. For instance, property owner has a deeper well that affects the shallower well next door, and we're hearing more and more about that. How does that fit into this guideline?
Well, it's tougher to make a determination based on the language of the governor's order uses, right? Because
so
it talks about alteration of it, right? So
I get it, but bottom line is the harm that's to the older, more shallow well, they can't even go deeper within this guideline, correct?
That'd be a determination.
Yeah, it's and that issue really isn't about these guidelines. That's the governor's order. The governor's order says alteration to wells. It doesn't, you know, make exceptions for deepening of wells when you don't impact someone else. It, I mean, the county is just stuck with what the governor's order says. And so these processes just set forth, hey, here's the governor's order. This is what it means. And so this is the type of information we need from you so that we can comply with that order and, you know, issue a law.
Thank you. Didn't help, but thanks.
Sorry.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, Mr. Nielsen presented his case, right?
Yeah. But I'm hearing more and more that
where
it's
you
not
still have to have a determination made whether deepening as well could affect adjacent wells or not. That's what it boils down to.
But we didn't make the determination on another well affecting that well, whoever it may be, did we? Because it wasn't under the governor's order.
Correct.
So the governor's order, and I guess that's where I'm going, is it's it's created the dilemma that we're right in the middle of.
Yeah, it's no fun.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
what do y'all want to do?
I was going to say, the one thing I think this will do, correct me if I'm wrong, it will at least put us on a path, the new guidelines. It will give us a process to process an application if it's submitted. We're currently, we have no process.
Yeah.
So, with that in mind, I would make the motion minus the indemnification agreement.
Okay. I have a motion to that effect.
Wait, one more question. Is this process going to go away once the governor's order goes away? That was my question before. Or are we keeping the process?
It's written within the guidelines. If the governor's order goes away, the guidelines go away also. But we would still have work to do ahead of us via ordinance to specifically address the public trust document.
Well, I heard a yes when I asked that question. If it's not a yes,
that's what I'm trying to clarify.
I need to know.
There's no sense to vote yes on it if it's just going to go away.
It should be under.
I'm doing a lot of work
on it. If it's not a yes, I'll withdraw my motion.
So, for Section 4, as the
Section 4 is the basically it says the implementation of executive order.
Yeah.
Looks like it's on page 5 and 6.
4, 5, and 6.
4, 5, and 6.
So public trust item 5 stays in place.
And that item is evolving. This is just setting forth, here's where we're at right now.
Okay.
But as you know, we have a presentation by Dr. Foglia, and as Rick said, there's work to be done.
And what about item 6, CEQA?
CEQA will remain after the governor's order.
By law or by this guideline?
By law. So these guidelines aren't creating laws. These guidelines are indicating here's what the law is.
Okay.
And so this is why you have to give us this information and why we have these processes and the things that can happen along the way.
Excuse me for dancing around this, but the reason I am is because I see this as an interim stopgap until we get to the longer-term look that Dr. Foley is going to propose to us, that is actually the fulfillment of the GSPs that protect our groundwaters on the city.
Definitely related to an extent, but
yeah.
But perfect term, stopgap.
We wouldn't even be dealing with this
is,
if the governor hadn't issued what he issued.
And it can also be viewed as a transparency document, just to let everyone know that this is a process, this is why we need this information from you. These are the laws, we can create these laws, but we've got to absorb them.
So is Dr. Foglia's presentation going to affect anything in this document that we're talking about right now?
But it will provide an alternative to a hydrogeologist, essentially, potentially, if we get there. Yes.
Would that rewrite something that we are already talking about?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it would.
So
it would be in addition to, right?
Okay. So maybe I'm going to just throw this out here, board. I still have a motion though.
That's all right. I can always withdraw it.
Are you withdrawing it?
I'll withdraw it.
Okay, so
discussion.
I don't know. And counsel, I'm going to look to you. Is it okay to hear the next presentation before we act on this?
Yes, you can order this in any way that you want. I think these guidelines are for the present, and Dr. Foglia's presentation is for the future.
Yeah.
And so there are certain people that like to have their well application process now.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what.
And I understand that, but I don't want to say yay on this, and then we hear another presentation, we come back and go, oh, wait a minute, we need to insert this.
Understood.
That's where I'm headed.
Okay.
I just would rather
and
get
yes,
it all done at once.
That's fine to, you know, to table this agenda item pending the next one.
Okay, so that's all I need to say, is that I'm tabling it till after
Good.
The next item.
I want to add one thing, I think, for clarification.
Sure.
And Natalie, if I'm not on the task council. So these are basically educational guidelines. Think of them as temporary, essentially,
mm-hmm.
right? If we have presented to us today a hydrogeology report that meets satisfactory requirements for this, we can evaluate and say, yes, we will move forward and issue that permit, regardless of these are adopted or not.
Okay.
Because if we can internally make the finding that, hey, the governor's order has been fulfilled, we're going to
okay. Thank you. That helps, too. All right. So we'll table this for a while until we hear the presentation or public request from 8A. Okay?
Good.
Do we need to take a quick break for this, Wendy? Are you okay?
I'm good for now.
Okay.
All right. With that, I'd like to introduce Dr. Foley.
Okay. Good morning, still.
Good morning. Laura Foglia, Larry Walker Associates and technical consultant for the GSA. Looks like there are a lot of questions.
You're going to answer them all. We won't even have to ask them.
Okay,
right.
Okay, so you know, this process has been a very complex process all over the state. So I did some research and worked with Rick and Natalie on what are the other counties doing. So we can, and I was mainly concentrating on counties that have similar issues like governor's order and public trust. So for example, Napa and Sonoma. So just to see where everybody is at. And I want to tell you, a lot of counties are still in the process of coming up with ideas. So it's not just Siskiyou County, that's for sure. Next. So you know the executive order. I leave it there, so if somebody wants to read it later, I can just look at the extract that it's really telling why we're here. And next. But a quick summary. So why are we now discussing? I have to say, in Siskiyou County and the counties that are interested by public trust, honestly, the discussion started earlier. I remember that we started talking about creating maps with location back in 2020. So it has been a process. Then the governor's order added a level of complexity, so we were starting looking at things in a different way. Because basically the governance order is really looking into connecting the well permitting process with the GSP, the Groundwater Sustainability Plan, and what the Groundwater Sustainability Agencies are doing. So, and it is basically the order is really looking into be sure that whatever well permit is not inconsistent with what is in the GSP. So, and this is like in a sense, probably from the perspective of a groundwater sustainability agency, this probably gives some reassurance that you have control over your plans and you are not going to be in troubles at some point. You know, two of your plans have been approved already. Scott and Shasta have been approved. We're still waiting on Butte and Dooley Lake, but so who knows what happens, but I think it's good to have some kind of control about the future implementation. So this is this might be seen as the positive side of being involved in this discussion. Basically, the main request from the governors is that the GSA needs to kind of give the final green light on well permitting when it comes to basins, areas that are within a groundwater basin, a sigma basin. So for you, it's Scott, Shasta, Butte, and Tule Lake. And there is also the need to determine that the well is not likely to interfere with existing nearby wells and not likely to cause subsidence that would impact infrastructure. So Scott and Shasta, we kind of ruled out the subsidence. In Butte Valley, there is still some kind of an open question. There were some data showing some subsidence, so we cannot completely say no, it's not happening. We kind of have to go through the process for at least for Butte right now. As it is right now, the governor's order doesn't apply to domestic wells that are producing less than 2 acre feet per year, and it doesn't apply to public supply systems. Next. So looking at the county map, I just did. I just put together a couple of maps for discussion because you know we have our sigma basins, we have public trust resources, how and where everything applies. So we have the main basins that we will be that we have been working on already: Scott, Shasta, Butte, and Tule Lake Far East. The other are smaller basins that have not made it through medium high priority for sigma reasons, so there is no real ongoing studies on that basin. And next. So then I kind of overlap the basins with the land use. And basically where you see green, we don't need to know much more, but where you see green is pretty much where agriculture happens. So my reading of these maps is that there are really almost, not zero, but really small chances that there will be a request for a big production well outside of the sigma basins. just because there are no areas where there is room for that. And so in a sense, this kind of increase the complexity, because then, you know, in the Sigma Basin, at least Scott and Shasta, we need to deal with governance order plus public trust. But at least I guess we will not have to spend much time for areas where there are no data, no information, because there is no plan already developed. And this really kind of help the approach that I will be showing to you in a second, because you know, in the Sigma Basin, we have all the geological data set up, we have the models, we have a lot of studies done in the past 5 years, so we have a starting point. Outside the Sigma Basin, we would need to really have an hydrogeology that goes and double check all data, current information, and come up with a different approach. Next. Okay, so what I did is really looking at what these other counties have done. And the idea is that if we want to look at both governance or order and public trust doctrine, we can start from the very beginning and say we can have a different pathways to permitting ministerial wells, and ministerial wells are the ones that are defined in the governance or order less, and they are pumping less than 2 acre feet per year, or are public supply wells. But then we need a more in-depth analysis for non-ministerial wells, and this in-depth analysis needs to be consistent with what we found out in the GSP plans, and so the well is not likely to interfere with the production and functioning of existing nearby wells, and not likely to cause subsidence. I look at other counties' examples. How did they come up with the process? And the suggestion might be to use the models that we have in the Sigma Basin to come up with a table that will give us a sort of preliminary guidelines, like, is the well less than XXX feet from the next well? Is the well less than this many feet from a public supply well? How much is the capacity that is expected from the well? And depending on the geology, this table will be different in different locations throughout the Sigma Basin. But this will give us some kind of preliminary screening service, let's say. We will be able to say, okay, if the well is in the middle of nowhere, so far away from everything, most likely we can trust the models, and we can just say it can be drilled. Or if the well is really close to a number of other wells, it will require a little bit more effort. And the effort that we were thinking about is really, if we get from the applicant, or you guys get from the applicant, a request like, oh, I want to drill a well here, this is the depth, this is the capacity. And then we put it in the model, we see that, oh, this sounds like a little too much, but maybe we can come up with options like, or maybe you can drill deeper or shallower, you can pump a little less, and so come up with the ideal condition that would let the drilling happening in a way that doesn't harm anybody nearby.
So this chart is production wells only?
Yeah, the ministerial wells, they're out of the chart right now. Even if we will have to start at some point thinking about, and I got this question from different stakeholders in Scott and Shasta, we will need to start thinking about a cluster of 2 acre feet well. So I've been asked to see if we can maybe run some model scenarios that look into what happens if, let's say, a piece of land goes out of production. It's all an if, so I understand that there are complexities, but imagine that there is no more, one piece of land goes out of production, gets sold, and there are many houses that go there. And I've been asked by a few folks, okay, what happens then? Because many houses means many 2 acre feet well, and then it's a cumulative impact, like what we were discussing earlier. And you know, the good thing of having the model for Scott, Shasta, and Butte is that the model can take into account the cumulative impact. So at some point we will be able to really look into many different options.
Sure. The reason I ask is specifically what you're addressing, because 5-acre subdivisions in these basins don't have 250 feet of separation between wells.
Yeah.
It's impossible, which makes parcels unbuildable.
Yeah, and remember, these numbers, actually, these come from an example from Yolo County, so it's just an example. Here we can come up with something even better. I see, and I got exactly the question yesterday from a couple of stakeholders in Scott Valley. What do we do, and how do we really check it, and really what happens if all of a sudden you have 52-acre feet well? And that's something to be considered. Because at the end, it's like a big well, right? And if they are all nearby and shallow, they might have even a bigger immediate impact on the river. So that's something that needs to be taken into account. What we included and other counties included in the GSP as a way for kind of checking what's going on, because you know you can. Layer. And this is another thing that I saw many times. You can say, yeah, I'm going to pump less than 2 acre feet, but who's going to double check? And so in the GSP, we included a sentence that say that we don't want to see a net increase in consumptive use, just to be sure that the plan can be implemented. So no new acreages being grown. And how do we do that? We can, you can meter that, you can look at the satellite data, you know, a big new chunk of green, it's a new production, actually, and that requires water. So it's a pretty easy way to spot what may happen. I really would like to say for Siskiyou County, I can expect these matrices and numbers be completely different depending where we are. Scott Valley and Shasta Valley are so different. So we will use the model, all the data that we have, and come up with what we think is an ideal beginning, actually. Because you still see that in some specific case, you may still need a specific report. If you really see that the well is impacting with this tool, then that requires a further evaluation. Hopefully we will not get there in too many cases, but anyway. Can go next. So if you remember what we did back, and this is really back in 2020, we were starting looking at the public trust doctrine and what to do in Scott Valley. And this was an example. A couple of months ago, I had a chat with people from Sonoma Water, and Sonoma County at the end did something very similar. So the idea is that for public trust doctrine that is not going to go away, we need something on top of the metrics. We don't really just need to look at the wells nearby, we need to look at the surface waters, right? And so basically what they did in Sonoma County is developing what they called sensitive maps. So sensitive maps are areas within the county that really needs to look specifically into public trust doctrine. And so they cannot really, they don't just need to look into nearby wells, but really look at the entire system. The good thing is that in Scott Valley we already started doing that, and if you remember when we did, it was a bad timing. It was really the beginning of COVID when we had this presentation ready. But basically the idea is that depending on the color, there is more or less sensitivity to of a well impacting the surface water systems. So we can create something similar now. We have better tools and better models. And basically, in something like this, we can say, you know, maybe maybe a well in a dark purple area can just be considered with the same approach of before as before, just look at the matrix. Maybe a well that goes in the yellow area will ask us, will require us to go into a bit more studying. So having this type of sensitive maps will really help us in Scott and Shasta to understand where the critical conditions are. And I can expect in Shasta Valley that the map will be more variable just because of the variety of geology condition that is in Shasta. Scott, you know, everything is, there's the Scott River, so near the Scott Rivers we know how it is, and there's need to be more careful. When you move away, it really depends a little bit, yeah.
So the question that's been kicking around in my mind for a while is how to manage this.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than a band in the yellow, couldn't this be managed with a groundwater level of a certain elevation where a curtailment on that well would take place seasonally that's tied to the public trust flow of the river rather than a complete dam?
So the story is that we tried also for the groundwater plan and we decided not to go on a groundwater levels because we're starting getting the data that we need. For when we wrote the plan, we didn't have enough information to really set on a groundwater levels.
And the reason I bring it up, I don't mean to pick it apart, but the reason I bring it up is because, as I understand the model, the areas that could lose water first are the fringes because
mm-hmm.
everything drains to the middle. But it's not until you get to the middle at a certain elevation that actually disconnects the river. So it seems that there's a better way to manage that rather than a band. Because a band can still do the same thing, but it doesn't manage over time, over the season, the actual loss of the public trust in the river.
Yeah, and you know, the idea of the band is just as a first screening.
Mm-hmm.
Then obviously when you are really close to the river, we just need to rerun the model and really look at different options. And I really believe that now that the model has been completely revamped and really rechecked with now we are collecting a lot of continuous data. In the past, we were only relying on either monthly or every 6 months data. So with monthly data, you cannot set a groundwater elevation because you never know if you're getting the peak, the minimum, you know. It's just impossible.
Well, it's hard to do because you don't know what's coming into the system either.
Yeah. So, but I think now what we have now, we can definitely be way more precise on how we select. Still, the groundwater levels might be something that we want to consider and really think about it.
I'm just looking for more intelligent ways to manage the benefit for public trust and agriculture.
Yeah.
Using the scientific methods that are in front of us rather
mm-hmm.
than black and white kind of things that we looked at initially.
Yeah. No, and I think we will need probably really a combination of different things in for public trust to really, and that's what we are doing actually. So I guess I see like a first screening like a good way to just get started,
mm-hmm.
and then we will be the request. The idea is that the model will run for a well every time a new well permit comes in. And then we see what happens.
Okay.
Next. So if we want to think about a quick sketch of how we may see this happening, so let's talk about the governor's order. So there is a new well request. You ask yourself, is the well ministerial, so less than 2 acre feet, or is a public supply well? If yes, it's a ministerial permit. If not, one example might be something like the table that I showed you earlier, and we say per table XXX, is the well more than this many feet from the nearest wells, and within the metrics requirements, and with metrics requirement, I mean pumping capacity, well depth, and so on. If yes, most likely the well can go into the permit. If not, there are these two options. You can still have the California PG license report, but this is where we had the most of the pushback at the advisory committee meeting in August, because it's really difficult to find somebody that write this type of report. And the second option is really looking at the metrics that we had earlier. We can use the GSP models, and we can really work into setting specific distances. And we really need to demonstrate that whatever happens is consistent with the groundwater sustainability plan. So we are not going to destroy the success. Next. And then this one is pretty much the same, but this is for public trust doctrine. And the difference is just in the box on the right, because the well needs to, is the well more than a certain amount of feet away from public trust surface waters, and it's not in, in a critical area of the basin. If yes, which is gonna be a quick, a very hard call actually, but if yes, it's a ministerial permit. If not, we have again a two option with the model and our studies and with the California licensed PG.
Under the blue that's closer to the flag
mm-hmm.
there, the state someone would look at the model and the model said, hey, we don't think this is going to work, it's a sensitive area. Does someone go underneath it and say, hey, I'd like to hire a hydrologist because I question that science and I'd be happy to challenge you to look at it and see what it does?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, if somebody feels like the information that we are getting from the GSA or whatever are not in line with what they expect, they can hire somebody.
It's either work or they dig that a little deeper.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It can also go probably, you're right, in both directions. First our study and then, no, I'm not happy, I want somebody else. That's always a possibility. So we were thinking about there are a few things that might be nice to be added in the application form for a well, just to simplify the county work. Oh, and I forgot to say, for developing the tool and all these analyses that I was discussing about, we knew that this was probably going to happen, and we included a request for funding in the WI implementation grant, so the GSA can cover the cost of developing the metrics and the models and these things, which is, I think it's important. Yeah, we kind of increased a little bit the budget that we wanted to have for doing what we call the well inventory, and we decided let's go farther than that. But at the same time, this is because everything stuck. We were really thinking about how do we get a good grasp of how many wells are in the different valleys, and we really don't know now, and every time there is a discussion how many wells are out there. Would be good if the applicants provide information about nearby wells, if he knows that. I'm not saying that it's a requirement, but would be really beneficial so that then the GSA gets something back, because instead of us looking like crazy for wells, maybe we get some of the information up front. And it would both be also good to make every effort by the applicant on collecting recent data on the wells. Let's say that you have a well that was working and then it doesn't work anymore. Kind of keeping a track of even just point measurements every once in a while would be very useful, because that would really also accelerate the work for the permit. And next. And then this is something like, this is just for you to read in terms of what are other people, other counties doing. I mean, this was coming mostly from Sonoma and Napa. So, like as I said, the 2 acre feet per year, there are variation on the number. Somebody is asking for less. Somebody's sticking with the governor's order with the 2 acre feet for, let's say, ministerial wells. There are a lot of ideas that probably we can include in the guidelines also in terms of replacement wells, because I think replacement wells is one of the biggest reason for discussion, because somebody thinks, I already have a well, I just want to have the same well, why do I need to go through all of this, right? And so there are some counties, like Yolo was saying, if the new well is exactly just a few feet away from the previous well, it's going to be exactly the same depth, and it's going to be exactly the same capacity, they are kind of considering it like in a speedy process, let's put it that way. But with the requirements that, and this should go probably in the permit application, that the old wells gets destroyed. There are really a lot of problems throughout the state with wells that are not being properly destroyed, and in a lot of places they can cause contamination. So, in Siskiyou County there are so many. This is why we had troubles also in discussion with the state water board. In our models we have a certain number of wells that have been approved by our committees and so on, and we are pretty sure that that's a good number. But if you go online on the databases, there are so many more wells, because abandoned wells are not destroyed. And that's something to keep in mind. So maybe this might be a good opportunity to change something in the requirements.
Just to come up from the slide before on this one, it wouldn't be a condition that if someone wanted to replace a well or put a new well in, they'd have to get all their neighbor's information. Scientifically, we probably should, if human nature steps in, not all neighbors get along, someone could group one or the other. So it wouldn't be a condition that has to.
No, it doesn't have to, but it would be nice to see if maybe somebody will be happy to provide. We can say, you know, if you give us this information, it's going to go quicker. That's it. And maybe somebody will be making the effort just because he wants the permit to grow a little faster. I know. And it would save a lot of time for us, anyway.
And then in regards to the new well, would receive a, you know, meter on it. I know a meter has a certain cost to implement and everything. Could there be a condition that there's already a meter for a lot of well pumpers, and that's the electric cost? So if they have, I'll just throw out general numbers, 100 acres of irrigatable land, they're not going to put in a well to irrigate 150 acres because the cost for electricity is already a limitation that they have, and their own pumping cost. Could we say they're irrigating the same acreage of ground and not have to go through the cost of the meter?
Yeah.
Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. So there are different approaches. So I put the meter here because I think it's good to start thinking about it. For example, my at the beginning I have to say my main point for the meter was for all these wells that are less than 2 acre feet. For those wells, a meter would be very easy, and if they are domestic wells, you know, you can just easily have a meter. Actually, you are not asking, and at least you can avoid a lot of questioning about approving these 2 acre feet, less than 2 acre feet permits. Because we say, you know, we have a process to check that everything's going to be fine, and for the big ag wells, as I said, most likely we can keep having a check, and we have to do it anyway for the GSP, check the land use year by year. And if things changes, we can see that the things are changing. And if nothing changes, it means that the well was just replacing the old well. And I think really the key information is not, what I had in one of the first slides, like the no-net increase of consumptive. This is what was kind of suggesting the plan. And if we can keep going with that. It's doesn't matter how we reach the goal. Now, if it's with a meter, if it's just checking the land use, and there are different ways. So, and I just want to make you think about it, just because of how which direction everybody is going, and what's and all what all the excitement that it's happening in Siskiyou County right now. So. Yeah, so this is basically how I see a potential idea for moving forward with a kind of a structure approach. I really don't know, maybe not even know, but I don't think that the governor's order is really going away, but it might change and come from it in a different format, but I guess the involvement of the GSA probably is what will remain as part of the governmental order, like having the groundwater sustainability agencies approving upfront a certain new well.
So how would deepening an existing well to access what used to be water at a certain level, how does that fit into what you're proposing?
It has to go through the study, because basically you have to see if by deepening you are actually, I don't know, tapping into somewhere else and affecting other wells that are different from the ones that you were used to affect before, or the ones that were affecting you before. So if it's deepening, it has to go through the process, the study.
But if you have newer wells that have affected that particular well, whoever it may be, how do you reconcile that? I mean,
that's the biggest problem. And that's what I was discussing. I was discussing yesterday. So the problem is really that there was no regulations before, right? So for groundwater, there was no real thinking about impacting the neighbors, and wells were just going to come down. And this is it. This has been the case till basically 2015. And I don't know exactly, this cannot be retroactive, right? So we can just look into the future. And I don't know what can be done to go backward.
So just real quick, so what about groundwater recharge as, you know, curtailments shove everything in stream and no use, and you dry up, I'll call it the sponge. That's affecting this whole thing. And so wet systems work, dry systems don't. So how do we bring that to the table?
I'm trying. it's a great point, because that's what we have seen last winter. Some wells really suffered from no recharge in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
And I presented some results at the advisory board, at advisory committee meetings in October, where you can really see that some wells just didn't come back after the winter. And that's really why we are doing all the new projects. Right now it's mostly in Scott Valley, but really looking at ditch infiltration and how ditch infiltration can be a benefit. So we're trying. We want to have numbers to show,
mm-hmm.
and that's why we started a study over the summer, and hopefully we'll have some good results to show and just bring as evidence.
Supervisor,
sorry. I was just going to say that, you know, with the deepening of the well, couldn't there be question whether or not the well you're proposing deepen, would go deeper than the existing wells around you, therefore it's not tapping an additional resource, just the one that you can't get to anymore? But
it can be. Still, I think because it's a deepening, it might be a simpler check, but still it has to, I'm just saying, it has to go through the process. If we can really come up with these kind of screening tools that are a lot of things that can happen upfront to make the process faster. It's just that you cannot rule it out. That's my main message.